President Obama is having another big week. Yesterday, he announced a nuclear deal with Iran. Tomorrow, he plans to become the first sitting president to visit a federal prison. It's our weekly look now at the latest in national politics.
Also this week, Governor Walker is kicking off his campaign with a busy travel schedule to early primary states, and Hillary Clinton staking out her economic policy position against a backdrop of enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders' populist messages. Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538, joins us every week at this time. Harry, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, a lot of news in the last day and a half or so about the Iran deal. And one of the takeaways from this, aside from the politics, is that this is a key cornerstone to the Obama legacy. How big a deal do you see it as being part of that legacy?
I mean, foreign policy, of course, is one of the big assets that, you know, a president has in terms of his legacy. You talk about foreign policy, you talk about the economy, and those tend to be the two biggest things. And, of course, Iran has been a major player in the Middle East for a long time coming now, you know, going all the way back to the Carter administration where you had the Shah overthrown, and Iran has sort of been an enemy of the United States since then. So if we were able to have a deal with them whereby we deterred them from developing a nuclear weapon, that would be a huge deal for President Obama to say, hey, look, I got us, you know, out of this recession. I dealt with that well, and then I killed Osama bin Laden. And now I've made a deal with Iran. It's a troika. It's a very big thing for him. So if they are able to get this deal through Congress, he will be able to say, I've done it. And going forward in the history books will say that I've done it. And I've done these three great things.
Now, it's been contentious in its, you know, baby form all along. But now that it's actually a deal that's been agreed upon, what kind of reaction are we seeing from the right and the left?
Well, the right has pretty much been in universal opposition to this. There, if you look at the presidential candidates, with the exception of Rand Paul, you know, who obviously is off in his own corner, and the libertarian right is off in its own corner, most of the Republican presidential candidates have been clearly against this. Jeb Bush, who is thought of to be more of a moderate among the Republican presidential candidates, called it pretty much appeasement. So they're all against this. When this vote goes for a vote in front of the Congress, it would be somewhat surprising if you didn't get at least 99% of both House Republicans and Senate Republicans to go against it. The left, the Democrats, that's a little more interesting. Hillary Clinton has come out for the deal, which to me suggests that it's going to be difficult to see too many Democrats come out against it. But there are certainly going to be some who do. Robert Menendez, who's a senator from New Jersey, a Democratic senator, has pretty much come out against it. But it should be that more than 75, 80, 90% of Democrats come out for the deal. So we're seeing a pretty usual partisan split on it.
And what about the American people? What do they think about it?
Well, you know, the American people obviously have only been thinking about this in the abstract of what they've heard. And, you know, deals like this are very detailed. And I don't think a regular news, you know, even a regular news listener really can quite comprehend what's going on. You know, these things are tons of pages long. But most of the people, when they at least they hear sort of the deal in the abstract, you know, a general summary of it, have been mostly in favor of it. A Fox News poll last month, I think, had it 47-43, with 47% in favor and 43 against. And what we saw in that polling is generally the same split that we would expect otherwise, with Democrats being mostly for it and Republicans being mostly against it.
Congress has 60 days to review this deal. And during that time, will we also be seeing appeals to the American people one way or the other?
Well, I think what you're going to see is that, you know, congressmen and congresswomen are going to be listening to the constituents and sort of hearing, you know, what's going on and whether they think it's politically smart for them to vote for it. So, of course, the president and his administration is going to try and sell it. But the thing that's going to be key going forward to remember is that in order for this deal to get derailed, you're going to need to see a veto-proof majority in each house of the Congress to say, no, we don't want this deal. As long as there isn't more, as long as there's less than two-thirds in each the Senate and the House saying that they are against this deal, as long as there's less than that, then the deal is going to pass.
How do you see it going?
Well, if we figure all the Republicans, you know, go against it, then President Obama needs most of the Democrats to go for it. And at this point, it does seem that most of the Democrats are going to go for it, but there are still enough Democrats out there who haven't said one way or another which way they're going to go. That is, you know, it makes for a little bit of excitement during this summer. I think the smart money is for the Congress ultimately not to be able to attain those veto-proof majorities, but we don't know yet, so we'll have to keep an eye on it.
We're talking national politics right now with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. And in other big news for the president, he's heading to Oklahoma tomorrow to become the first sitting president to visit a federal prison, trying to get attention around prison reform. Now, this is something he hasn't talked a lot about during his presidency. Why is he bringing this up now?
I think, you know, it's the next thing. It's, you know, this is a president who comes from, you know, urban Chicago, and this is a big thing among the Democratic base that, you know, there are a lot of African-Americans in the Democratic base, and African-Americans make up a much larger percentage of the prison population than they do of the overall population. But I think the other thing that's important here is that he has support among all the different sections of the American public. Independents, Democrats, and Republicans are all in favor of prison reform, thinking that, you know, we have people who are in prison far too long. We have these mandatory sentences that we force judges to apply to criminals who might otherwise not get it. And so you see a lot of Republicans coming out and saying, you know what, I could get behind the president on this. And so I think Obama senses that there's a true opportunity to have prison reform. And I think another thing that's important is if you saw President Clinton today said in an address that he was wrong during the 1990s, that they treated criminals just too harshly. So I think there's a lot of support across the political spectrum for there to be a deal done so that there is prison reform and that we can help shrink the prison population.
Well, this is something, as you said, that has that bipartisan support. Does the form that the reform takes have any sort of political fault lines in it, or is that pretty much something that's bipartisan as well?
Well, I would say the thing that has to be, you know, what needs to be very carefully done here by the president is that any time, you know, President Obama in these hyper-polarized times that we live in attaches his name to something, it leads to the potential that now all of a sudden Republicans are going to see that and say, you know what, Obama's for it. I don't really want to be for it. So I think he has to be very, very careful in terms of how he presents this, but I don't think that there has been any sort of, you know, where he's like, oh, the states need to do it. There would be support for certainly federal legislation for it to be done. I think President Obama would be wiser, though, to take, you know, more of a hands-off approach, rally his base for sure, but don't try and reach out to too many Republicans. Allow Republicans to talk amongst themselves, and I think then you could get a real formula for success in passing prison reform on the federal level.
So as long as we're talking about President Obama, his favorability rating is up 6 points since last fall. He's now standing at 46%, according to Gallup. What do you attribute that to?
I think that, you know, most of that is attributed to the state of the economy. Although people are still very much not sure about the future, if you look at economic confidence in Gallup going forward, there was a rise going into early winter, and then it sort of leveled off and dropped off. But in terms of where people see their economic state right now, they're pretty confident about it. You see the jobs numbers that come up, they're pretty good. You know, if this now it's like, oh, we only had, you know, 125,000 jobs per month, which used to be that would be, you know, oh, that would be hailed as good during the height of recession. Now we're seeing that, and that's actually thought of as a bad sign. So, you know, everything is pretty much up, and a president's approval rating generally is tied to the state of the economy. So President Obama is doing well there. And then the other thing I would mention was, you know, he had that he signed the executive action with Dreamers, and so his approval rating among Hispanics has also spiked because of that.
Now, we had big news in Wisconsin this week and nationally when Governor Walker formally announced his bid for president. His speech, people said, it was a red meat speech to the base, and a lot of Ronald Reagan references in there as well. What do you make of his announcement and the platform that seems to be emerging?
This is exactly where he's playing to the base, and he knows that where his strength is. So I went back and I looked at, you know, all the past Republican presidential candidates going back to Ronald Reagan and how voters saw them. And as it turns out, Scott Walker is seen as the most conservative candidate among Republicans since Reagan got nominated in 1980. And that is actually a pretty good thing in this day and age where we're seeing a Republican base that's getting more and more conservative. So Walker knows that if he can play to the conservative base of the Republican Party and cast aside, say, the other frontrunners like Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio as these weak moderates, then he's got a real chance to rally the base and be able to put together a winning formula. And he did exactly the same thing in Wisconsin, whereby even though voters saw him as very, very conservative, and he delivered a lot of this red meat, he didn't make statements about rape and stuff like that that we've seen other Republican, national Republicans make over the past few years, sort of these outlandish statements that cost him sort of that moderate vote. But he has this innate ability, it seems, that he's able to capture very conservative voters and make them very happy without seeming too outlandish. He's very conservative, but he's not so conservative as to be seen as unelectable.
And Harry, just very briefly before we let you go, doesn't the nomination usually go to moderates?
The nomination has gone to moderates, but the fact of the matter is I don't believe that Republican voters have been handed a conservative option over the past few cycles that would be seen as being electable. I don't think most Republican voters saw either Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum, or going back to 1996, Pat Buchanan as really electable. Scott Walker, though, has won 3 times in 4 years in a purplish-blue state, so he is seen as electable.
Harry, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We've been speaking to Harry Enten, senior political writer, analyst for 538. He joins us every week this time to talk national politics.